Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Pop Culture Mail Show with PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by Anthony Bongiorno.
Hello.
How are you, brother mine?
I'm great. I'm fantastic.
I'm going to start saying brother mine, like Mycroft Holmes.
Who?
Mycroft Holmes.
I don't know who that is.
The older brother of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
he
yeah,
would
yeah.
say brother mine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm just going to start with a disclaimer.
Sure.
I feel like every time I'm on this podcast, all you hear is my fat breathing. So to the listener at home, I apologize for the breathy pod.
Well, that happens to me too. I have a deviated septum.
I think I do too. Undiagnosed.
I think our family has a lot of mouth breathers.
No, we certainly do.
I breathing through my nose is a real effort.
A struggle. Yeah.
So
I'm a big snorer.
I'm with you. I'm a snorer as well. Well, look, I'll fix the audio. We'll try to bring it as much as possible. When you're not talking, try to bring it away. That's all.
Okay.
That's all. Well, Anthony, thank you for the disclaimer.
You're welcome.
I'm sure everybody will appreciate it. So what's going on in the news? The Russo brothers, you know who they are?
No, fill me in.
The Russo brothers they're a lot of things. They were TV directors and producers. They produced most of season two of Happy Endings.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But now they're known as the Marvel guys. They directed Endgame and Infinity War, and they're sort of like, they became the sort of like masterminds of like the last phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
So they're boring.
So they're very powerful. Although one of them has a terrible toupee, and it's like, God, you're a billionaire. Either be bald or like get good plugs.
Yeah.
Call fucking Billy Bob Thornton's guy.
He has plugs.
He has the best plugs in the business.
I gotta look that up.
Billy Bob Thornton was bald, and then he wasn't.
Well, what about Jeremy?
And we all just accepted it.
Jeremy Piven was like middle aged, and then then Entourage started. He was 26 again.
Yeah, he was 26 with a full head of hair. Yeah,
he was like a middle aged fat bald guy.
So this will be exciting to not you. The Russo brothers are making an animated series for Netflix based on the groundbreaking card game Magic the Gathering.
That's going to be exciting to a lot of people.
That's probably exciting to a lot of people. Now, did you ever play Magic the Gathering?
I think I did. I think I once or twice.
Magic the Gathering.
It was quite a phenomenon in the late 90s.
It's super close to Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay.
In terms of its fandom, in terms of what the world is about.
Yeah.
There was a Dungeons and Dragons cartoon in the 80s. It didn't last very long.
Yeah, I've seen clips of that.
I'll watch it. I like fantasies. I like dragons and things, although I didn't watch Game of Thrones.
Neither did I.
Because that was more political. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I could go on and on about
not watching Game of Thrones. That'd be a great podcast. Just like
us trying to figure
what
out
don't
what
we watch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like why we don't watch it. Well, there's a certain point where when the 30th person says I have to watch something, I'm like, fuck you. No, I'm never going to watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Breaking Bad's the greatest show ever? Fuck you. I'm never going to watch it.
Not for me.
Oh, The Wire is groundbreaking? Guess what? Never going to watch it.
20 years strong, not watching that.
Never going to watch it. So what's weird is Magic the Gathering kind of destroyed Dungeons & Dragons in the 90s and then bought it. They were their number one competitor. They destroyed them, and then they bought the rubble and made it their own.
MTG. Was it ever? Like, is this the first time it's expanded outside of the cards?
I believe so, yeah.
There was no cartoon,
the cards have been around a long time, and there's like documentaries about it. There are tournaments for it and stuff, but this is I think the first like narrative thing. Unless there are books that I don't know about, that's entirely possible.
There might be.
That's entirely possible. Because there are tons of Dungeons & Dragons books as well.
Yeah, Dungeons & Dragons, I feel like, is having a bit of a resurgence.
You know who to blame for this, right?
Who?
It's those damn kids on Stranger Things. That's really what did it. That and like nerd culture and like it's yeah. cool to like shit like that yeah. now.
I was just talking about Stranger Things the other night.
Yeah.
With a couple of friends. And it was just like
Wait, friends?
Yeah. whoa. That's the guys, kind of comedy you get here.
Guys, this is my new format. It's called Gotcha.
But anyway, I was just like talking about how I never finished season one, nor did I watch season two, nor am I excited about season three. And I don't want to get a reputation for being that guy on the podcast who hates everything, because I'm really not that guy.
No, we've already just shit on everyone's favorite shows.
But at fuck the same the Wire. Time, I just feel like Stranger Things, it's like, okay, I watched most of the first season. I get it. I get it. I don't yeah. need any more. It's pastiche. It's 80s. Whoa, it's fun. I get it.
My thing with Stranger Things is I like it. I don't love it. And people want me to love it.
Well, now it's so everywhere, like Burger King sponsorship. Right.
The new season is starting soon.
Dunkin' Donuts, the 4th of sponsorships. July. Yeah, it's just like it's like the biggest show now.
Yeah. I always said, here's a test. Imagine the same narrative, but take it out of the 80s and all of that fun gloss of the 80s.
Boring.
Right. It's yeah, not exactly. there. Whereas, like, I've been rewatching, now that it's summertime, I've been binging a lot of stuff. So I've been rewatching The Goldbergs. And I love the 80s-ness of it, but I think that would still be a funny, entertaining show, that's not a good show. In the 80s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would blame Stranger Things.
Yeah. I just...
And that Millie Bobby Brown. You know
she
what I mean?
Is a menace.
She is enemy number one. I actually just saw an interesting... Somebody did a weird mashup of times in interviews where she's super annoying and talks, and you see the other cast members like rolling their eyes at her. Like, why can't? Like, there's even a clip where she's talking, and the other kid's like, "Can I speak? Can I
That's
speak?"
That's so funny. Can they I definitely speak? Hate her.
Oh, they definitely hate her. They're like, "Oh, because everybody fucking loves her." She's like doing raps on Jimmy Kimmel or whatever the fuck they do.
Well, she's a star. Fallon. Who even are the other kids?
She looks so much. She really needs. They really need to make a movie out of the YA novel Leia, Princess of Alderaan, and have Millie Bobby Brown play her, because she looks so much like a young Carrie Fisher.
Yeah,
and she'd be perfect.
Yeah, it seems like it's in her wheelhouse.
Leia, Princess of
Wasn't she Alderaan. Just in the Godzilla movie?
Yes. Did not see it. Not a fan.
No, I don't think anyone saw that.
All right, moving on to the next story. Justin Bieber challenged Tom Cruise to an MMA fight on his Twitter. Randomly.
Who would win?
Tom Cruise, right? I mean, Tom Cruise is much older, but he's in great shape.
That's true.
And yeah. he's got that Scientology magic. You know, he would
like disappear. He'd be like, now I'm behind you.
Yeah, yeah. Like a cloud of smoke. He would float over him.
I was going to say Bieber because he's just younger, but that might not be true.
It's
he doesn't seem like he's in as good of shape as Tom Cruise is.
Listen to this, though. The crazy thing is it might happen. This is from the website We Got This Covered. This is written by Matt Joseph. Tom Cruise and Justin Bieber UFC fight likely to happen.
I would pay such good money for that.
It seems like people in – this is all rumor mill, but people in Cruz's camp are saying that he is interested in it. Now, as far as I know, Bieber hasn't really said why he wants to do this. I don't really know why.
There is no why.
He said Tom Cruise will, quote, never live it down if he refuses to fight him. It's one of the most wacky things that's happened in a while. But I think I
love it.
Honestly, I think more celebrities should fight.
That imagine there were like a reboot of Celebrity Fight. What was that show? Celebrity Fight Club or
the Claymation one?
Yeah, imagine yeah. there were a reboot.
That was in like 2009 or something. No,
but with real celebrities. Like yes. Now it's real.
They would. Well, there was a reality show. That was like celebrity boxing. Deathmatch?
Oh, yeah. Really?
The big one that everyone was into was Screech versus Horshack from Welcome Back, Kotter.
Oh, who won?
I believe Screech won.
That's not surprising.
Because Screech is like He's 30 wily. Years younger yeah. than Horshack.
Oh, my God.
And of course, you can't refer to them as anything other than
Screech and yeah. Horshack.
One time... Screech was on Howard Stern, and Howard Stern just kept calling him Screech. He was like, "Hey, what's going on, Screech?"
He probably got so pissed.
No, he was like, "Please, please call me Screech." But what's sad is Dustin Diamond, the guy who plays Screech.
Yeah.
He sells Screech merch, but he does it with like five E's because NBC owns Screech spelled the right way.
Oh, God.
Isn't it a bummer?
It's such a bummer. Remember when he made a porn in an effort to save his house?
Yeah. And it was like...
It's all very dark.
But it was like a fake comedy parody porn.
Yeah.
Which is like somehow sadder than a real porn.
Yeah, I know.
That it's like you're trying so fucking just hard.
Just commit. Commit to the bit.
Exactly. I don't know if you've heard about this, but I'm a little excited about this. There is going to be a new animated Spice Girls movie
with the voices of all
the Spices, even Posh.
She's back.
And they're doing new music, and I am for it.
Did you see that she apologized for leaving?
No.
Not Posh. I'm lying. She's not the one who left.
I thought Posh was the one who left to go.
No, Posh is Victoria Beckham.
Right, right. She's the one who's like really, really still popular. Right,
but the one who left was actually, God, all the Spice fans at home just screaming.
One of the Mels?
Maybe.
It wasn't Baby.
No, it wasn't Baby. It was the redhead. Was it Ginger? I think Ginger left.
I don't think Ginger's her name.
Ginger Spice.
Oh, right. Ginger. I forget their Spice names.
Ginger Spice, Scary Spice, Baby Spice.
Ginger and Scary are both Mels, right? Mel B and Mel C.
Mel C, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the lead, Ginger. So she was like the lead one.
Yeah, I think she left.
Well, that was dumb on her part.
And now she's like, I never should have left.
First of all, spot on impression.
So now they're going to
have been working on that?
Now they're going to have an animated film, and I'm for it.
Yeah.
The Spice Girls brought a very, very fun brand of feminism.
The movie is coming out through Paramount's Animation. It's going to come out in 2020. All five members are a part of it. There's going to be both classic songs and new songs.
I was
going to
say they better pony up the classics.
Oh, yeah. And apparently, the Spice Girls were the ones who had the idea. No, I don't know if that's true or not.
I could see that.
I like that it's animated because I feel like that opens it up to being really fun.
Right. And also, like, you don't have to worry about the... First of all, it's probably cheaper, right?
Yeah.
And then you won't have to worry about
I think you wouldn't get all five if it weren't animated.
Right.
You definitely wouldn't
have to worry about the logistics of like who's where and,
right,
you know, I don't know, things that would come up.
I'm immediately imagining like Yellow Submarine, but with the Spice Girls.
I was thinking like Powerpuff Girls kind of aesthetic. Okay.
I think
they're going to fight crime for sure.
Oh, well, I think the reason I'm thinking Yellow Submarine was the Spice Girls movie that came out in the 90s was so much trying to be like Help and Hard Day's Night.
Yeah,
no, it's kind of a Hard Day's Night and Help together, which I've never seen it all the way through. It has its diehard fans.
Oh, yeah. There's a cult following for that movie.
I don't know if I watched it now I would like it.
Probably not.
Right. I know it's got weird people in it. Elton John's in it as himself.
Yeah. It's worth
Meat
a
Loaf
watch.
Is in it as their bus driver.
Yeah. Meatloaf is in it as their bus driver.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
I think that'll be fun. So it's going to be an animated movie or a series?
Movie.
Okay.
I'm for it.
I think it's great. I think it's great. I'm excited that there's going to be new music.
Yeah. Now, has there been new music? They did a tour, right?
Yeah, but I don't think they sang anything new.
No new stuff. Well, it's about time.
It is. The world's been waiting with bated breath.
You know, it's funny. When they first came on the scene, what? 30 years ago now? What, 96?
96, yeah, so 20
years ago.
22 years ago.
I don't know how to math. So, no, 95 or whatever. They were such a joke, and they didn't last that long, but they've also, like, not, none of them became, like, I think, like, drug addicts or criminals.
No, none of them really became like a hot mess. And
Victoria Beckham obviously became like almost like royalty in a sense. Because she's married to David Beckham.
Right.
So, and she was the Posh one. So it makes sense that she was Posh.
She was Posh. Who was Sporty?
Oh, Sporty.
Or was she one of the Mels? Oh, God.
No. The Mels
are all turned around.
The Spice Heads are
fuming.
Just throwing their fucking iPhones out the car window. They're so mad at PCMC right now. And I apologize. Let's move on to something else. Tracee Ellis Ross.
Yeah.
The daughter of Diana Ross.
Yes.
And, of course, the mother on Black-ish. And the narrator of the new Black-ish spinoff, Mixed-ish.
Mixed-ish.
She is executive producing and starring in a animated Daria spinoff.
What?
So I don't, and I watched Daria, but I don't even remember this character. There was, so the character was named Jody London.
Okay.
She went to school with Daria. And the, at last we saw her, she was the valedictorian in like a Daria TV movie.
Okay. Was she, so was Tracee Ellis Ross?
No, she wasn't the original voice, but she's going to be the voice now of, I think, an adult Jody.
Okay.
And it's going to deal with, so the main players behind the new spinoff, it has nothing to do with Beavis and Butthead anymore.
Okay. So no Mike Judge involved.
But Mike Judge had no involvement in Daria either. MTV owned Daria, right, and they spun it off completely without him.
Right.
And, so one of the writers, Grace Nedge Edwards, who worked as a story editor on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, she's going to be writing for it. So, yeah, it's going to follow her. This is from MTV. Jody will follow her as she comes into her own and enters the workplace in her first post-college job in tech. It will show Gen Z struggles.
Whoa.
Hello.
Wait, Gen Z? Okay.
Daria ended in 2002.
She's I guess they're updating it because Daria would definitely be a millennial. I guess now they're making it like she hasn't aged and now they're Gen Z. Because Gen Z are like kids now.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. The themes that the series will focus on should sound familiar, echoing current shows like Bold and Insecure. It will be smart, funny workplace comedy full of commentary about everything from gentrification to sex to tech. It seems more in the vein of what Daria was going for in terms of its audience.
Yeah.
Daria is, I think, one of the best spinoffs ever.
Ever. It's so, I mean, like, Beavis and Butthead is iconic.
Right.
But, like, it's not at all rewatchable.
No.
Daria was brilliant and great and underappreciated at the time.
Right.
But now I feel like is way more recognized as being a better
right,
show.
Right, right. It's like a classic now.
Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah.
And her character is not even really the same character that she was on Beavis and Butthead.
No, on Beavis and Butthead, she was like the smart girl, but she was also kind of like a wet blanket.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas like in Daria, she was just like a maladjusted teenager.
Yeah.
And people didn't hate her.
No, she was so lovable.
Right, right. She had her best friend, Jane.
Yes.
Who people shipped.
And her sister, Quinn.
Yes, 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 Quinn. Right, Craig Morgendorfer.
Yes.
Right. And her mother and father were really funny, too.
Yeah, it was a great show.
That was a great show.
How many seasons was that on?
Oh, I don't know. But you know what's funny? It's sort of coming back in terms of the sort of postmodern wheel of time.
Yeah.
Because you're beginning to see, like, T-shirts and Hot Topic of like Daria references and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's, and I don't know where they're getting it because I don't know if it's online. I know for a while it was on Noggin, but I don't know if Noggin's still a thing.
I was going to say, where can I watch that?
Noggin was the, remember Noggin was like the teen Nick?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know, but if you've never.
Because Nick and MTV are under the same Viacom.
Yeah, Viacom.
Yeah.
If you've never watched Daria, try to find it. And if you've ever, if you've never watched Beavis and Butthead, I say look at the early stuff, like the first season, just in terms of its animation, it's really good. Or just very interesting and all the weird shit it was doing. Like Frog Baseball is the first episode, and that's the one where they brutalize a frog, and it's violent, but it's also crazy.
Well, it's also like just a way to introduce music videos, right?
For right. A while. Well, I think, well, first of all, none of it was done the way they do it now where they do it like overseas. It was all done in MTV, which is
it looks like it was crazy. Drawn by hand.
Right. Like there's a story that the people from the state were like fucking around playing football in the MTV office and they like knocked over one of the animation machines and Mike Judge got mad at them and was like, get the fuck out of here. So they were all doing it in-house and I also think there was, so it was cheaper to have them do voiceover.
Right.
Which they're both voiced by Mike Judge. But I think also at that time there was still an edict that you had to have music videos in every MTV, program, yeah. Which is not at all,
I know,
not at all the thing anymore.
There are like no music videos on MTV anymore.
I haven't watched MTV in so long, but the last time I checked in was probably 10 years ago. And at that point, they were doing this thing where at the end of the episode, they'd say music from this episode available on. And I don't even know if they do that anymore.
Well, they were doing that back in the day on Dawson's Creek too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. The Beavis and Butthead movie was actually very good and pretty well reviewed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beavis and Butthead Do America. Yeah. I had the first CD I ever owned was Beavis and Butthead.
And Cher.
And Cher. I forget what the album was called, but they sang with Cher, I Got You, Babe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's interesting that, I mean, Tracee Ellis Ross is a talent.
She is.
So.
She's great.
I'm interested to see what this show is going to be like.
I feel a little bad for whoever originally voiced Jody.
She doesn't matter anymore. Maybe she's doesn't want to do it. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to Trailer Corner.
Okay.
So we watched three trailers.
Here we are in the Trailer Corner.
We're here.
The setting is much more conducive to conversation.
It's a theater of the mind, Anthony. It's a theater of the mind. We watched three trailers. Dr. Sleep, Frozen 2, and The Amazing Jonathan documentary. Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with Always Amazing, which is a different documentary that's about him that's now available for free on YouTube.
Sounds like it sucks.
This one is the one we watched is the Hulu show.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's start with that. I loved Amazing Jonathan as a kid.
Yeah, I think I did too.
In the 90s, when Comedy Central was mostly stand-up, they had a series called Lounge Lizards.
Yes,
which
I remember
that. Half-hour specials. And he was one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
He had, I don't know if he ever had more than one act, but he had like this perfectly strong act where he did magic. He made drug. He was very like counterculture. He made like drug jokes.
Yeah.
He,
which went way over my head at the time.
Right, right, right. Right. He like he had this big, huge thing of powder and
he snorted all
and
that,
he would
yeah.
snort it up. But it was like a trick because no way you can snort it. But like, I didn't know that he really was a drug addict at the time. And he had a Fox 5 special one Sunday night that I watched a million times. He had this bit where he had this assistant, but the assistant was kind of like a ditzy person. And sometimes he'd have fake blood in his stuff. And, you know, like he'd act yeah. like he cut himself. And so it was a lot of fun shit. Like one of his best, simplest tricks, and it's barely a trick, is when he does the thing where like he's got a bird and then he puts the handkerchief over his hand. And he's like, on a count of three, the bird will be gone. And he pulls the handkerchief. He's just giving you the middle finger. Like he would do shit like that. He would like do a trick that doesn't work and then make it work.
Yeah.
So I loved him as a kid. And then apparently a couple years ago, because of all of his years of hard, hard drugs, they were like, your heart is fucking fucked and you have 1 year to live. And that's when the filmmaker of this film started following him and documenting him. But it's 3 years later and he's not dead yet. And it looks from the trailer like there's some tension between Amazing Jonathan and the documentarian because
there's some question as to whether this is all one big trick.
Right. There's a question of whether or not it's like an Andy Kaufman type of bit, which I don't, maybe I'm not the hugest Amazing Jonathan fan, but he was a magician, but I don't know. I believed him.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know. Maybe
they're playing it up for the documentary.
Maybe it also kind of looks like they're playing it up for the trailer specifically.
Yeah.
Like maybe this will just be like a small part of the actual documentary.
Like, yeah. Because there's one talking head that's like, oh, none of us believed it. But I believed it. He went on WTF with Marc Maron and he talked about it for like 2 hours. And it was like, I'm dying. Like it was a moving episode.
If at this point he were to say it was all a trick, it would just be – it would have such a terrible reaction.
Right. He also looks like
shit. He looks horrible.
He looks like a man who's dying. He's very thin. His hair is all gone. He's talking very slowly. Now, he's done a ton of drugs.
But he's also probably on a ton of painkillers too.
The coolest part of the trailer is he's smoking meth and he's trying to get the documentarian to smoke meth with him.
Yeah, that's crazy. And then they show the other talking head is like, if I were you, I'd smoke meth. Right. It's like gonzo journalism.
Eric Andre, the comedian Eric Andre is like, oh, I loved him. I would smoke meth with him, which is crazy.
Oh, my God.
You know, that's a really interesting mind experiment, thought experiment. Is there any celebrity that you worship so much that you would – I know that you're not a drug taker at all, right? You've never even smoked marijuana.
Never.
Is there any celebrity that you love so much that if they said, Anthony, let's just say weed. Let's smoke marijuana together.
Yeah, weed probably. I don't think I'd be like.
But who would you smoke meth with?
I don't think Sarah Jessica Parker is going to be like, let's smoke meth.
But would you?
But would I? No.
You'd say no, Sarah Jessica Parker. I'm not going to smoke meth with you.
Smoke meth? No. First of all, I'd be like, Sarah.
With SJP?
Come on. How could you have fallen so low?
I don't know. I'm a sort of sober person. I don't do anything.
I'd smoke weed with somebody, I guess, if they were really famous and they were like, I want to have this experience with you and I really love them. Mm. I don't know, though. Depends.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. Kevin Smith is now known as a pothead, but he actually wasn't really a pothead. He, like, even when he played Silent Bob, like, he never actually smoked weed. And he didn't become a pothead until he made Zach and Miri make a porno. Because Seth Rogen, assuming...
Who is a pothead.
Right. He assumed that Kevin Smith was a pothead because he made the Jay and Silent Bob movies. And he was like, oh, I can't wait to smoke. We got to smoke together. And Kevin Smith was like, I actually don't smoke. And then...
That's funny.
And then he got him smoking. And now he's...
Yeah, actually, I don't think I would.
No?
No, because I feel like I've just lived so long now without doing it that now it's just like, I don't want to break my streak.
Yeah, I knew somebody who once never had a cup of coffee. And I was like... That's crazy. I was like, you know what? I think that's insane. But keep going with it. Yeah. Don't break that now.
Yeah, I know.
You're like 30. There's no reason to break that. So I don't know. It looks like an interesting documentary. It's a Hulu documentary, which means I won't have to pay for it. And I was, you know, he when I was a weird little kid, he was totally in my wheelhouse of like, he's funny, he's weird, he dressed weird, he had a lot of energy, and he did magic, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. He's much more punk rock than like Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
Penn and Teller get a little preachy, especially lately, but he was very much just like cocaine fueled.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm just going to run around and do fucking crazy tricks. And like he would do like a trick, like he would do like non, almost like the way Robin Williams did comedy. He would do like non sequiturs. Like he would tell a joke and then he'd like take a pin and put it through his fucking tongue.
Yeah.
And that everyone would scream and then he'd take it out and be a fake tongue.
I remember that bit of him stabbing his tongue with the fake blood and everything.
Right, right.
That is iconic.
Yeah. And there was also one time he like swallowed a bunch of do you remember he swallowed a bunch of razor blades?
Yes.
And then a string, and then he took it out, the razor blades on the string.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, God. There was a lot of fake blood, I feel like.
Yeah, it was very... You know what? I'm realizing now he was very influential on
Cousin
Brothers.
Cousin Brothers had a lot of fake blood.
Comedy group I did when I was in my 20s. There was a lot of fake blood in that. Yeah.
I remember going to see you, and then the next comic out came out, and there was like fake blood all over the mic and everything, and he was like, what happened out here?
I remember being in the bathroom of the shitty New York Comedy Club, I think on 72nd Street, and like washing fake blood off my chest in a bathroom.
And like, being like, we made it.
Being like, there's no business, like show business, like no business, I know. Everything about it is appealing.
God, dark days.
What? I was just, this is the greatest day of my life. All right, let's talk about Frozen 2.
Let's.
Thoughts?
All right, so here are my thoughts. I think it looks really interesting because it looks like such a departure from the first one.
It looks like epic.
It looks
fantasy.
Like a superhero movie,
yeah.
Which I think is a cool angle.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that may be, again, also more for the trailer because it is definitely going to be a musical and, you know, whatever. And it's probably going to be more like the first one than they're presenting it as.
Right.
But there's so much – they just took such an interesting path because, like, there's so much mystery in the trailer.
Yeah.
And there are those, like, little diamonds that nobody knows what they are.
Well, what I think's happening there is I think it's raining and she turns all the rain into ice.
Oh, that's interesting.
But it seems to be about her – superhero-ish. It seems to be about her figuring out where her power comes from and how to like use it more.
So listen, there are two theories that have been floating around.
These are not your theories.
These are not mine, but I subscribe to one of them.
Okay.
There's a lot of fall imagery. So one thing that people are guessing is that there's an Elsa for every season, and she's going to like link up with the fall version of her.
That's like The Last Jedi.
Yeah. And then another one... Which a friend of mine told me, this might just be a personal theory of hers, is that she thinks that Anna has powers too that she just never tapped into, and that Anna is fire.
That makes a lot of sense.
And that Elsa's ice.
That would be pretty sick.
Because it seems like this is all like, in the trailer, they're like, it seems like one of those sequels that's going to reveal something you never knew about before the first one even took place.
The trolls are narrating, and they say something to her about, like, you don't understand your power.
Right. So I think, and Anna has the red hair, and Anna right. melted her ice.
Right. She could be fire person.
Yeah. I think it'd be interesting.
Pretty cool. I also liked the beginning of the trailer, which was also the entirety of the teaser, where she's at the ocean and she's trying to like she's trying to expand what she could do with her powers.
Right.
And she's running and she's trying to like turn the water into ice.
Yeah, yeah. It's really cool.
It reminds me of like any time you've ever seen like Superman try to fly for the first time, or like in the original Spider-Man when he's like running across the rooftops and it's like trying your power out.
And she's wearing pants now.
Fuck yeah.
Which is cool. And then I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard that Bo Peep is like a really awesome character in Toy Story 4, and she's also like wearing pants and stepping up.
Yeah, Bo Peep is pretty awesome in Toy Story 4. I saw it. Yeah. I'll talk about it more later. Minnie Mouse has pants now, too. There's one of the cruise ships has Captain Minnie, and she's dressed like a captain.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, so no, Frozen 2, I think, looks good. Definitely. They're definitely going to bring back Let It Go.
Yeah, I can't imagine not seeing Let It Go in some way.
I'm trying to think of another Disney movie, not Pixar.
Uh-huh.
That has had a sequel
like this,
and I can't think of one. I feel like they were all straight to VHS.
Right, right. That was their thing in the 90s. Yeah. They felt like it wasn't worth it.
But they decided to not do that anymore, so they stopped.
Toy Story 2 was the first one that was supposed to go. But
then it was so good that they were like, let's release this theatrically.
Right, exactly.
Which is why if you look back at the four of them, Toy Story 2 has like the lowest budget, I think.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Is the most forgettable, too. I feel it's like the nobody, one I remember nobody the talks least. About Toy Story 2.
I remember so little about it.
Yeah.
I don't know who the antagonist. All I remember is that's where.
It was a toy collector.
The female Newman cowboy comes in.
Yeah. Newman was a toy collector.
Okay.
Yeah.
The villain in the fourth one is chilling, but also you really feel for them.
Oh, God.
Well,
it's like Lotso. I kind of felt for Lotso in 3.
Oh, the purple the bear?
Yeah.
I found Toy Story 4 to be a bummer. It was so so existential. It was just like I couldn't. So
Frozen
they've been
too.
Working on this for a while.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
It's they've been cooking this up. They seem to have a lot of like they didn't know what they knew we have this phenomenon. You know, it's like the fucking new Wizard of Oz. Like it's like this is a huge thing.
Very influential, yeah.
And it's like how do we proceed with it? And they were smart to not rush right into it.
That's what I was going to say. I feel like if this were 10 years ago, they would have been like, oh, hurry, we need to get one out in 11 months. But, you know, like I feel like finally Disney and Pixar have realized that like the best thing they could do is take their time to make sure that's really good.
Yeah.
Which they've done.
Yeah.
Except for Cars.
Yeah, I think Cars is sort of like a loss leader. I think they know that Cars is for very, very little children.
Very little children.
And they don't put a ton of effort into it.
No, not at all.
Let's talk about Dr. Sleep.
Okay.
Now, you've read the novel, Dr.
Sleep. I did. I have it. It's right there.
Okay.
There it is.
Now, I believe you were on the episode where I announced Dr. Sleep in the news segment. And we were, I believe it was you, me, and Emilio. And I believe...
Yeah, that's right.
I believe we were questioning at the time, how will they deal with the connection to the Shining movie?
Oh, boy.
Will they shy away from it?
No.
We know now from the trailer...
They are leaning in.
They are fucking hanging their hat on it.
Which is so interesting. I don't want to say it's a bad move. I actually think it's a good move.
I think it's a move that could bite them in the ass.
Well, it's interesting because... maybe for the casual fan, there's nothing eyebrow raising about it.
Sure.
But for anyone who's like an actual Stephen King fan, it's very interesting because Stephen King has like famously hated the Kubrick version.
Right.
And even went as far as to make his own TV version.
Right.
In 97. But what's weird is as he's gotten older and has grown more reflective, now he kind of likes it for what it is.
Yeah. I think he hated Kubrick.
He hated Kubrick, but you have to admit that, like, yes, it's very different from the book, but the Shining movie is a great horror. It's a classic.
It's almost a perfect movie. And when I say perfect movie, what I mean by that is like...
structurally?
Yeah, every note in the symphony makes sense. Like, it's completely beautifully constructed. And something I think about with The Shining is it's... For something as amazing as it is, it's somehow not influential. And I think that's because it was so ahead of its time. When you think about like what The Shining does to be scary, like using perfect symmetry to make you feel uneasy.
Yeah.
And shit like that. No one else does that. Like, still ghosts in movies are fucking floating around. Like, you think that after The Shining, you would see a lot of people stealing from that movie, and you don't, really.
Yeah, I think what I will say is I think that the first season of American Horror Story took a lot from The Shining. Okay. In that it had ghosts just being played by people.
Right, that's true. Right.
Because that's more unnerving, because it's, yes, like, oh, a ghost can just be a person that, you know, nobody else sees, but you see is just there. They're not floating around. They're not transparent. It's just a person there.
I don't know how much this is true or not, but have you ever heard the legend of of the...
Yuli's Gold?
Yes. No. City Slickers 2, Curly's Gold. No, have you ever heard the legend of the supposed lost ending to The Shining, which some people say it exists, some people say it never was shot?
Which one?
Supposedly, after everything you see, all of a sudden it's just like a normal breakfast table and the Torrance family is sitting around eating. And I don't know what happens exactly, but at some point you realize they're ghosts now, just living in the hotel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I heard about that.
And, I mean, I've heard, like, oh, yeah, some guy in Sweden has the footage somehow, and he'll sell it to you for $1 billion. Yeah,
it probably was never shot.
Yeah, I don't see Kubrick. Kubrick was rewriting the whole time through, but he also was meticulous. I can't imagine him taking such a swing like that and then not, you know, not knowing
that's
what
very
the,
American Horror. That's like the end of American Horror Story Season 1.
Yes, that's true.
I highly doubt that happened.
Yeah.
I kind of doubt that was filmed.
Yeah, I agree. I kind of want it to be.
I mean, it would be cool. It would be an even bigger departure from the ending of the book. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
I've read The Shining many times. And when I first read it, I was a kid. And I obviously was really into the miniseries.
Sure.
And I really, really... was a King fan, and I thought it was just like the best book I'd ever read.
Yeah.
And then I read it again, like in high school, and I still loved it and whatever. So on the most recent read, which was like a couple years ago, so I was like 30, I kind of wasn't as impressed. And it became clear to me that, like, this is one of his early novels. Uh-huh. There's a lot in here that's filler. There's a lot that could have been trimmed out. Right. And now I kind of feel like the Kubrick movie is an improvement on the book.
All right, here's what I would say about that.
Even though I didn't, for a long time, I didn't think so.
Here's what I'd say about that. It is and it isn't. I agree with Stephen King that making the family unhappy before they get to the hotel seems to ruin the turn of what happens.
Right. Agreed.
But deciding, no, it's the 20s. These are 20s ghosts, and how much that can mean about, like, you know, American power and all that shit.
Right.
Like, that to me... was a really smart move, a really good move on Kubrick.
Yeah. We could go, I mean, we're supposed to be talking about Dr. Sleep, but let's just dive in for a second.
Mm.
The Shining.
Sure.
What I don't like about the Kubrick movie is certain throwaway things that Kubrick added that I feel are odd. Like saying that the hotel is built on an ancient Indian burial ground, which doesn't ever play out later.
Right.
But then... Like aesthetically, you never see that come up again,
right?
And it's never referenced again.
I don't remember it being referenced.
It is on the way to the hotel. Oh. They're like, oh, it was built on an ancient Indian burial ground. But then, and then a lot of people have made a meal of that and said, like, The Shining is about.
Well, there's that documentary Room 237 that's like all these different theories.
The Shining's about colonialism, or whatever.
Or The Shining's about Jack is gay and they can't deal with it as a family.
Right, he's reading Playgirl in one.
Right, he's reading Playgirl. Just also, like on a job interview.
The subtraction also of the... Really, The Shining book is about alcoholism.
Yeah.
And to take that out...
I think it's there in the movie.
It's there, but it's not as explicit as it is.
No, it's not as explicit. No. Well, that's the thing. The movie doesn't allow you... The movie follows Jack, but it doesn't allow you to... It almost doesn't have a protagonist. It doesn't allow you to get close to anyone in the family.
Right.
You're sort of just observing sort of an unfolding tragedy.
Right.
Even the way, like, they give you the dates, it feels like a crime is about to be committed.
Yeah. I think it was in Room 237. Somebody pointed out that those title cards are like completely arbitrary and weird, where it's just like Wednesday, but then it's like they've actually been there for like many weeks. So, like, it's weird that
yeah.
There's a lot that's odd.
There's a lot that's odd. There's also the whole thing that, like, O'Grady's office shouldn't have a window in it. It doesn't make impossible architectural window. Sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's also the thing that they say. No, not O'Grady. O'Grady was the former caretaker.
Grady was the caretaker, yeah. Right.
Grady, they say Grady had two kids and they were different ages, yet we see them as twins.
Twins.
But I see that much more symbolic as like connections, like right. Danny and... Because often Danny and Wendy are wearing matching clothes.
Yeah.
Because they're connected.
Yeah. I think it was... Was it Dick Halloran's office? Oh, no. Dick Halloran is... No.
Yeah.
He's the one with The Shining.
He's so good in that movie.
He is. He's really good.
It seems like...
And he dies, which he survives in the book.
Interesting. It seems like that this movie, hopefully, I don't know, I haven't read the book, but like I like the idea of an older person with The Shining helping a younger person.
Well, what I was
and you see the little girl in the book when she's like, are you magic like me?
Right. It what's interesting is I feel like they're really leaning into the iconography of the original, and right. they're really like taking the score and like trying to get people excited, yeah. like, oh, this is a Shining
the
sequel.
Death March. But
I will say that it reminds me so much of like 2010,
yeah.
which was a sequel to 2001,
right,
where it's
right.
like you have a sequel that's a sequel, but also is so tonally different
right.
that it's not really a sequel.
Yeah.
I feel like it's in a way it could come back to bite them. You're right in that they're trying to have it both ways.
Right, right. Because in the book of The Shining, the hotel explodes at the end, right?
Yes.
So the trailer for Dr. Sleep shows him walking through. That's not in the book, or it is in the book, or is it in a dream or something?
It might be in a dream in the movie. I don't know. In the book, he goes back to the site of the Overlook Hotel.
Okay.
But it's not there anymore.
In the trailer, they've recreated like the Kubrick
sets. That's really
sets.
Cool, though.
No, it's very cool seeing him walking through. He looks through the
here's Johnny.
Here's Johnny, a hole in the door.
Yeah, it's cool.
I don't know. I love Ewan McGregor.
Yeah,
but I don't think his American accent is that great.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? Like, if you're a Shining – not Shining. If you're a King fan, and I was a big fan of the Dark Tower books, there's characters in that with The Shining. Like, The Shining is a known power to exist yes. in the King yeah. universe.
And they call it different things in different
right, right,
books.
Right, right, right. Like, The Shining was the sort of Southern African-American – like, his grandmother called it The Shining.
Yeah.
Halloran's grandmother called
yeah.
it The Shining.
Yeah.
But isn't this movie about, like, vampires?
Yeah, so the True Knot, led by, I think her name is Maggie the Hat or something.
Sure.
She has a hat that she wears, like a top hat. She's the main antagonist.
I thought that was Tom Petty.
Whoa. They travel around the country. They're like kind of like nomadic, and they travel around the country and kill kids with The Shining and like Hocus Pocus style.
Eat their Shining,
and that's how they live.
So they're Shining vampires.
Yes.
Not blood vampires.
No, they're Shining vampires.
Now that sounds cool, but it sounds tonally very different from a family falling apart in a hotel.
It is. So that's why, you know, like, to be fair, even the book Dr. Sleep is very different from the book The Shining.
Right, right. But that's why I wonder if using all of this Shining iconography is going to bite them in the ass, because you're not going to get The Shining Part 2.
No, well, that's the thing is, like, you know, King fans know that Stephen King's characters come up again and again throughout his novel.
Right, absolutely.
So Dr. Sleep is just kind of like less of a sequel to The Shining and more of just like, here's another story, but this time it's Dan Torrance, and you right. know him. You met him as the little kid in The Shining.
Right, but now he's like a drug addict or something.
Now
right?
he's, I think he had like struggled with addiction.
He
was an alcoholic like his father.
Right, but did he do it to try to drown out The Shining, so like he would feel it less?
Yeah, it's been a while since I read it. I read it when it, like, literally it was delivered to my doorstep the day it came out, and I read it, like, that day.
Nerd.
Yeah, I know. I want to reread it before I see the movie. Huh. But even, like, little things, like, it's going to be room 237 instead of room 217.
Right, right.
You know, like,
the Kubrick.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sure it'll be fine, too. I feel like I'm going into it with the correct expectations, but... you know, Dr. Sleep did well for a book, but,
yeah.
you know, the American public at large are not that literate. You know, I'm sure more people have seen the Shining film than
novels.
Read the Shining book. I've never read the Shining book. So marketing it this way, I don't know.
But the thing is, I think marketing this way is in a way good, but also in a way can, you're right, backfire, because if you're going into it having only seen Stanley Kubrick's The Shining and expecting a sequel to it, it's going to be very,
you're
very
not going to get that.
Yeah, no.
You're not going to get that.
Yeah.
All right, we have to take a break because I need to put new batteries in the recorder.
Okay.
All right, Red Rum. Welcome back to Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC. Anthony, you had a correction?
I have two quick corrections.
All right.
First of all, her name is Rose the Hat.
Not Maggie
the Hat. I was thinking of Maggie the Cat from Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
All right.
And earlier you said The Legend of, and I said Yuli's Gold, which is another movie from the late 90s, but is not what I was thinking of, which is City Slickers, City Slickers 2, The Legend of Curly's Gold. So I apologize to all the Yuli's Gold fans out there.
So there you go, folks. You've been issued an apology. I hope you're happy. We still offended the Spice Girls fans, but what can you do? So this is Chill Sesh. This is where we talk. unlike the rest of the podcast,
this is where we talk.
This is where we have unstructured talk.
All right.
And we just talk about stuff that we've seen or whatever. I saw Toy Story 4.
Okay, what'd you think of it?
Well, let me say, I'm going to spoil some things, okay? So let me give you a spoiler alert.
Don't spoil anything big because I haven't seen it.
I'm not going to spoil anything. Well, what do you mean big?
I don't know. I've heard some people say they have thoughts about the ending.
So, I won't say the ending.
Okay.
I won't say the ending.
Okay.
But I'll say things that happen in it. Okay. Right. I found, now, maybe I was admittedly in a bad mood when I saw the movie.
I was in a dark place.
Right. I was in a bad mood when I saw it. So it was probably more emotional, but I found it to be such a bummer. And even the people I saw it with were like, wow, that was a bummer. It's funny. We went to the theater and there was a bunch of little kids dressed like the characters and they were loving it and screaming because it is very funny.
My nieces and nephews all dressed up.
Yeah.
And it was cute.
It was adorable to see whole families together watching it. But the older people in the audience were getting the larger themes.
It's a lot about, like, why are we all here, isn't it? Or
no, it's more like what happens. All right, let me give you an example.
What happens when we die?
No, it's what happens when the thing you're supposed to do, you don't have to do anymore. It's almost about retirement. Like, there's a scene where, you know from the trailers that there's Forky, which is the little toy that Bonnie makes out of a spork.
And isn't he having an existential crisis because he's like, am I a toy or not?
Right. He come because only toys are alive, so he becomes alive when she makes him.
Okay.
So that's a weird thing.
Okay.
But then there's a scene where, what do you call it? You remember from Toy Story 3, Andy grew up and he gave his toys to Bonnie. So right. Bonnie's the little girl now. So there's a scene where Woody's trying to tell Forky, like, what his job is, what his place is in the world. He has to take care of Bonnie. And he's talking to him and he goes, your job is, we have to take care of Andy. I mean, Bonnie. And everyone in the audience went, oh.
Oh, my God.
And, like, that's his thing. Like, Andy's gone and Woody doesn't know who he is anymore.
Oh, my God.
He's a toy without a kid.
But he's got Bonnie.
But
it's not the same.
Bonnie doesn't care for him as much. Bonnie leaves him in the closet.
Oh, boy.
And plays with the others. Bonnie even takes his sheriff thing and puts it on... What's her name? The other one. The Joan Cusack one. The girl cowboy.
Oh, Jesse.
Jesse becomes the sheriff. And, you know, he was sort of like a type A, you know, he was the one who kept it all together. He was the one who was like, well, our job is to take care of Andy.
Right.
And he wants to take care of Bonnie, but Bonnie's getting older. Like, it's just like, it's so sad because it makes, like, I'm sitting in the audience going, fuck, like... Like, what do we do when our Andy is gone?
It's almost like an interesting metaphor for, like, empty nest syndrome.
It really is. No, it really is. And, this isn't giving it away because you've seen the trailers. Bo Peep, she kind of embraces not having a kid and being a quote-unquote lost toy because she feels like she has more autonomy and she'd do whatever she wants with her life.
How do they cross paths with her again? Because she was not in the third one.
I think she has a cameo in the third one.
No, she's not. I just watched the third one. She's not in the
third
one.
She has
a
silent cameo. I'm pretty sure that she's in the background of a scene.
Because she was supposedly gotten rid of.
It begins with a flashback of they get rid of her.
Yeah.
And and then they cross paths. The simple reason they cross paths is Bonnie and her family go on a road trip, and where they are camped out, there is an antique store. And Bo Peep's in there, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And it's Annie Potts back.
You're right. I'm glad that they said, you know what, you know, it was a small role in the, but like, let's not recast it. Let's do, let's be cool and have Annie Potts be a big part of this movie.
In the first Toy Story, Bo Peep is like Woody's girlfriend.
Right, right. It's in this movie, that's sort of the thing. It's more like they have a relationship, whatever that means, with toys. The longer the series goes on, the more
the
more questions I have about how this world works.
Well, that's like in Toy Story 3 when they all passively embrace death.
Yes.
And it's like it's like, so do they die when they melt?
I guess so.
And then also my friend Anthony,
but if they don't melt, they live forever.
Right. My friend Anthony and I were talking about this the other day. At the end of Toy Story 1,
yeah,
they have this moment where they come to life in front of Sid.
Yes.
And they're like, we're alive. Yeah, we're watching you. And it's like, that was a really weird card to play so early.
Yes. Because
now it's like, he's right. He said there are so many other situations where they could have just been like, hey, we're alive.
Right.
And they could have gotten out of.
Well, I always thought it was a plot hole that if Buzz believes that he's Buzz Lightyear, the space ranger.
Why wasn't he talking?
Why doesn't he talk? Why would he play dead around Andy?
Yeah, it's. You could poke holes.
But it's also weird that they play dead, too, because they know they're alive, but they also know that they're not supposed to be.
They know that it would be terrifying for the kids to know they're alive. Ah, it's weird.
It's very weird. It's very. I mean, the reason Pixar did it was because they were new, and they couldn't animate. I mean, if you look at the original, if you look at Toy Story 1, it does not look as good as you remember.
No, not at all.
Compare 1.
I heard 4 looks incredible.
4 looks incredible. Like, I saw a thing comparing, there's a cat in 4 that looks real to Sid's dog in 1 who looks like garbage. Yeah. And it's like, you know, they picked toys because toys can look fake.
Right.
It was a smart decision to make that their first feature.
Right.
It's amazing that it's so old. I mean, 1995... We saw it together as little kids.
Yeah.
In 1995. How old were you in 95? I was 12.
I was 9.
We went to see it on Thanksgiving.
I remember. I also, somebody was saying.
I've seen everyone in the theater.
Yeah, so have I. One of my friends was saying that like he remembers going to see it with his parents and now he's taking his kids.
I mean, it's magical because little kids do love it.
Oh my God.
It's still huge.
Yeah, it's. I feel like it's even bigger than ever. It's so...
Because it's like at a legacy now. Yeah. Like, because, you know, also like when you're a little kid now, you can watch all three at home and you watch them over and over and over again.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very cute the way kids love it.
Yeah. Yeah, my godson Dominic was like, I saw him the other day.
Yeah.
And he said, Uncle Anthony, I saw Toy Story 4. And I said, did you like it? And he goes, yeah. Like, I was like, his 3.5 years of life have led up to this moment.
Right, right.
Like, he's never been more excited about anything.
This is the greatest thing that's ever happened. You know, there probably will be more Toy Stories.
But
I think it's time to just have a new kid, new toys. Just the same idea.
New toys.
Yeah, I think that's what I originally thought with 4. When they first announced 4, I think the buzz around it was going to be new toys.
And there are some new toys, right?
Oh, no. There are new toys. Actually, if I had a complaint about the movie, I'd say that a lot of it is Woody with a bunch of new toys, and Buzz and the others are very much in the background. There's very little Buzz in it. Very little.
That's weird.
And then Slinky and Potato Head, they're like barely in it.
See, I love Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head.
They're barely in it. It's mostly...
Mrs. Potato Head came in part 2.
Yes.
She was not in the original.
The movie's mostly following Woody... Bo Peep, the two carnival toys that are Key and Peele.
Okay.
The new bad guy who's like a little girl, like an old-fashioned doll where like, you know, when you lay it down, the eyes close, and when you
like
pick it up, the eyes... like a baby doll. And by the way, her story bummed me out so much. She has a broken string, so she never had a string that works, so she can't speak, so no one ever loved her.
Oh my God.
She's like, I've never... At one point... Like, she's the bad guy because she's trying to steal Woody's talking box.
Okay.
But then at one point, when, like, they turn her into a good guy, she's like, I've heard you talk about Andy. I've never had that for a day in my life. And I'm just like, I'm just like, oh, God. Like,
does Andy show up?
It's so painful. No.
No.
Sorry to say Andy's not involved at all.
You know, I was just watching 3.
But the specter of Andy.
He's everywhere.
Hangs over everything.
I was just watching 3. And I was talking about this. That part of the beginning of 3 where Andy decides to take Woody to college
yeah.
and then looks at Buzz and then throws Buzz in the garbage. yeah. and you see Buzz's face, like, oh my God, he just threw me in the garbage.
Yeah.
Part of me feels like Woody felt a little bit good about that.
He's like, fuck like you.
After all these years, like, he still chose me first.
I'm the real one. there's a couple moments like that in 4 that
where they still have a little bit of a rivalry about it.
No. Where scenes where toys are discarded.
Oh God.
And you see the heartbreak in the toy.
It's so horrifying.
And it so destroyed me at the time. I was crying hysterical during this movie. I was like ugly crying.
No, granted, you said you were in a dark place.
I was in a dark place for sure. But just like, oh.
So is this one more emotional than 3?
I'd say. Yeah, absolutely.
That's interesting because I thought
it's about what is... 3 is about, okay, our boy grew up. What are we going to do now? But this goes further into like just being about Woody. Like, Woody's like, who am I? Who am I now?
Interesting. I got to see it. I'll probably see it soon.
It's, it's definitely beautiful looking.
It looks amazing.
It's like, very, yeah.
Like visually from what I've seen.
Yeah. Key and Peele, I think, are very funny in it. I like the choice to cast the comedy duo as a duo in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's also cool to get a glance at, like, what would it be like to be a carnival toy and be stuck on a wall and kids win you.
Yeah.
You know, that's something they haven't dealt with before.
Yeah, they've done other kinds of toys. Like, they did, in the first one, they did the... You know, the first one did a lot more with toys not knowing they were toys, now that I think about it. Because yeah. the Martians... In the little machine, the claw machine, they didn't know that they were toys either.
No, they didn't.
They kept saying they were like waiting for the mothership to come.
It was the claw. It was the claw. The claw.
I mean, which is so clever, but how did they get that self-awareness that other toys didn't?
I don't know. It seems like Woody's the one who really knows everything.
Did every single Buzz think it was real?
Oh, man. That's what about the series.
And you know what else? Buzz was a video game. So doesn't that mean that Buzz can pop up in the Wreck-It Ralph franchise too?
What? Was he a video game?
I think he was. I think Woody was an old TV show, and I think Buzz was a video game.
I always thought Buzz was supposed to be like a Power Ranger.
But then wasn't Buzz versus Zurg like a video game?
I just remember him. I remember he was a cartoon. Maybe he was a video game at some point as well. No, you're right. Does every Buzz sound like Tim Allen?
Right. It's weird.
Yeah. There's a lot there.
Because, like, Woody being an old toy makes it, like, more believable that he's the only one.
Right.
But then absolutely. Buzz, there were, like, hundreds and thousands of them.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, it's...
It'd be interesting if, like, another Buzz showed up and was like, I'm Buzz. No, I'm Buzz.
Oh, man, that would break a little kid's brain. That would literally destroy a child.
Do they all have the same personality?
So then would every Woody also be super... forthright and loyal. Man,
this is what they should explore in Toy Story 5.
I had an idea where, almost like Wall-E, it should be the toys in the future and all humanity is dead. But the only thing
that's a nice place to start.
But the only thing that lasts
are the toys
because they're plastic and they're just in a dystopian world and they don't know who they are.
Well, because the thing is, you could have argued that Toy Story was supposed to be like through a child's imagination, except that they come to life at the end and scare Sid.
Right.
So then that gives them agency.
Right. That both almost sailed.
Like the Lego movie kind of is like, well, this is all through the little kid's imagination.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Even though they fuck with that too.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
It's weird, man.
Man.
I used Toy Story when I taught existentialism.
Wow. Because it's like, who are we? Because
I used Buzz as an example. When I was
I was
teaching Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis. And then I was explaining existentialism, and then we went into No Exit by Sartre. And then I was like, well, here's an example from pop culture. Look at, you know, Buzz Lightyear.
How do you say it?
Sartre.
I never know how to say it.
It's Jean-Paul Sartre.
Sartre.
But I don't speak French, so I just say Sartre. Jean-Paul Sartre.
I never know exactly Jean-Paul how to say Sartre? It either.
But anyway, yeah, it is a really good example of an existential crisis.
You know, Sartre had a romance for many years with Simone de Beauvoir.
Yes, I did know that.
And they just like eat crabs
together.
Well, that's racist. Not all French people.
Against French people?
Not all French people eat crepes. How dare you?
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry to the constituency of French.
PCMC is huge.
Huge in France.
In Canada, but still a lot of French people.
You're like the Jerry Lewis of podcasts. Jerry Lewis is supreme genius.
So, speaking of Disney, I almost saw a man die in a Disney store recently.
Oh, okay.
Recently was Donald Duck's birthday. So Disney's, first of all, I don't know if you know this, but every single day when the Disney store opens, there's a little fucking thing. Every single Disney store, every single day. Basically, if there's somebody there, they have, they say, you get to open it, and they bring out a big key, and you start the magic.
Oh, that's really cool.
This happens every single day.
That's cute.
So, what they've been doing lately is...
Well, because the Disney store, you have to understand, with Toys R Us being gone, the Disney store is like the number one toy store now.
Oh, wow. That's a really interesting point. Especially
since all the properties are owned by Disney.
Wow. Right. That makes sense. That's where you get Star Wars toys.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a really interesting point. I had not thought of that. Although I just read that some Toys R Us's are going to come back for Christmas, I read that too. But Christmas only.
Probably like pop-up shops.
Weird. So they've been doing this thing at Disney where, like, to celebrate certain events, they'll have keys, and the keys are cool because the, you know, it looks like a key, but like the, you know, the end of the key that like goes into the lock mechanism, that looks like the castle.
Okay.
And then the fat part of the key is the D.
Okay.
So it... It's a cool design. And they did one for the opening of Aladdin. And then anyway, they did one just a couple weeks ago
for Donald Duck's birthday.
No, I think 90th or something. Oh, 90th right. or maybe 80th.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, sorry.
80th or 85th. Anyway, so me and my friend Jen, you know her from the Harry Potter episode. She's a big Diz nerd. We got there early and we were like, oh, there's probably, because we live in Staten Island. We went to the Staten Island Mall. And we were like, we're probably the only ones there. But we weren't. There was a line of people there. There was a woman in front of us wearing a beautiful dress that had Donald Duck, like, design
that's,
in it.
That's cute.
There was adults and children. There was tons of people. So we were like, oh, fuck. So we waited online, and they only had 100. They only had 100 keys. So the first 100 people to check out with anything will get the key. So we will, you know, we looked at the line. We were like, I think, like, 30th or something. So we're like, okay, we're good. We're good. So... The Disney people come out. They're like, listen, everybody, we want to make sure everything happens orderly. Oh, you know, God. Is there a little kid here that wants to do the key? Whatever, the little kid opens the store with magic.
That's
okay.
Cute.
So, but here's the problem. They open the store. Some people...
Just grab one thing and go to the register.
Right. Some people... Well, yeah, exactly. Some people, for some of the line, that line just went straight to the register and grabbed anything along the way.
Right.
Where some other people thought...
I'm going
to
shop.
I'm going to go in and get something and then get on the line to buy things.
Right.
Which is what I did. I went and I got, I forget what I got. I got this little something. And then I went to the line and the line was out the door. And I was like, well, where's the line to buy stuff? And they were like, oh, no, this is the line. They were like, you go to the back of the line outside of the store. Bring the product that you haven't bought yet out of the store. And I was like, well, that's bullshit. Why do I have to go to the back of the line? I was one of the first 30 people. But I eventually... I basically strong-armed myself in. I went down the line and I said, who has something? And one person had something. And then the person behind them didn't have anything. It was like, you don't have anything? I'm going right here. And I just, whatever. Maybe that was a dick move, but I was like, this guy has something. I'm calling him the end of the line and this is where I'm going. You're not going to stop me.
So people were online who didn't have anything that were just going to grab something
right.
as they got in.
Right.
There was essentially two lines for no reason. That first line meant nothing then.
That first line, I guess for many people was that line is not just to open the store. That line will immediately, once the store is open, that line will go right to the register. Where some of us thought that's the line to get into the store.
Right.
And then there'll be a line to buy things.
Right.
So Jen first goes outside and I'm like, come back. And I let her come where I was because no one was going to stop fucking me. All right. But then there was this old man there. And he wasn't a sweet old man. He was a mean old man. And he had a cane and he was fucking... He was angry at everyone. And just... He was just throwing his anger around the store at no one in particular. Like, this is bullshit. I waited on a fucking line for an hour. This is fucking bullshit. He's just screaming at no one in particular. And I'm thinking, like, just do what I did and get on the fuck, just get online. You're an old man with a cane.
Who's right. gonna, Nobody's stop, gonna you? Stop you?
But he's screaming, there's a fucking bullshit.
He sounds a lot like Donald Duck.
Yeah.
He originally voiced Donald Duck. That's why he's which so is wh- Which irate. Is bullshit.
I mean, they should just give him a key. He's the original Donald Duck. So, so eventually this guy gets online and he's in front of me. I don't know how, but this guy gets online and whatever. You're in line now. Shut up. Just be happy. Okay. but he's still angry for no reason. And he's just, again, just screaming randomly. He's fucking people, Staten Island. Blah, 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 blah. So a few people behind him is a young man who I believe was a vet. Okay. And I believe that because he said something along the lines of, you're going to give me a PTSD event or whatever. Because the guy, the young guy, flipped the fuck out. And he was like, hey, you're disrespecting everybody on this fucking line. I'll fucking snap your neck, old man. I'll fucking kill you.
Oh, my God.
Like, this guy went from 0 to 60. When you
saw an old man almost die, I thought it was going to be like a cardiac event.
No, no.
You almost saw him get murdered.
I almost saw a murder at 10 a.m. in a Disney store on a Sunday.
Over a key.
In front of many children. It was not a magical event. So
nobody
event.
Was, like, upset that these guys were, like, cursing and screaming in front of all these little kids?
Oh, no.
Oh, was everybody upset?
Everyone was very upset and scared because this guy... Yeah. This guy went from 0 to 60 so fast, and he seemed like, oh, man, he's going to kill this old man. He told the man how he was going to kill him. I'm going to snap your fucking neck. And by the way, the old man shut up real quick. Oh, he was sure. Like the old man looked terrified. And then the guy's girlfriend was like, honey, just leave. Leave the store. Leave the store. And then as he's walking out, everyone's like trying to like not look at him, but everyone's looking at him, and everyone's fucking terrified. And he's like, I'm going to fucking have a fucking – he looked like he was about to have an episode. Which is why I thought he was a vet, because it looked like a guy who's dealt with stress,
yeah.
And this old man's fucking triggering him. This guy was triggered, okay? So then everyone's like, everyone's awkwardly laughing. People are like, oh, okay, weird. It's not very magical. And then like 5 minutes later, the guy comes back and he's still angry, the young guy.
Oh my God.
And then everyone's like nervous again. And then mall security comes in and asks him to leave.
Oh, I kind of feel bad for that guy.
Well, his girlfriend stayed online and got a key.
Okay, well, that's good.
But it was
because that guy was really just speaking up for everyone else.
Right, he was he was defending the line.
Yeah,
but you go to you lose the high ground when you threaten murder.
Murder, yeah.
When you threaten, you know, like when he was just saying you're being disrespectful to everyone on this line, that was I was for that.
Yeah,
but when you're like, I will snap your neck.
So did you get a key?
Yes, I did. I got a key and I got out alive.
And then you held it up in front of a lot of crying little kids.
I was like, what I got? No, I think everyone, I don't know if there were more than 100 people. I think everyone got one, at least while I was there. But it was fucking weird. That it was a weird God, event.
The worst things... The worst things happen at the mall
on a Sunday
humanity
morning.
Humanity is at its most base.
And by the way, these the two I'm going to say teenage, maybe 20-year-old girls who were running the register. They were not prepared for the amount of people that were there. They were not prepared. They were woefully unprepared for this whole event.
It's so interesting because I knew absolutely nothing about this.
I thought I was going to be the only one,
yeah.
And I got on a line, and I'm like, are you all Staten Islanders? Are there this many other man children in Staten Island?
I guess. Maybe they come from... There probably were some from Brooklyn.
Or like
Jersey.
Nerd culture has grown, and more, and nowadays, yeah, let's go get a, you know, a key that we can't buy.
But nerd culture is one thing. I feel like Disney... Classic Disney characters were not always a part of nerd culture,
but they are now.
Fandom,
right? Guess. They call themselves Disnerds.
Yeah, yes. I guess they were just
they were waiting. Disney YouTubers.
They were always around. They're just now they've come out of the closet.
Right. My friend Jen, she's a Disney Instagrammer. Right.
Okay.
Her Instagram is just Disney stuff, and she just broke over 1,000 followers.
Well, that's interesting.
Way more than I have. So, yeah, it's sort of part of the nerd thing now.
Huh.
So what's up with you?
Jeez, not much. I have nothing to match that story.
Well, it was pretty disturbing.
Yeah, really.
I'll never think of Donald again without thinking about that. Wouldn't it be great, like, performance art piece if they both started talking like ducks? Like,
and then they both bowed.
And then a little kid was like, Uncle Donald.
Wow, that's a terrible impression.
That's as good as I can get.
Boy.
We're just talking. You don't have to supply me with any interesting story.
Oh, let's talk about Late Night.
Oh yeah, let's talk about Late Night.
I thought that was a great movie.
Declaration.
I really loved it.
I'm gonna make a declaration
Go
right
ahead.
Now. I think along with Judd Apatow's Funny People, it's one of the best movies about comedy ever.
Yeah. That scene where she goes to do stand-up and she's bombing.
Yes.
Is great.
Yes.
And then she leans into, like, self-deprecating.
Yeah, yeah. It is... So it's got Emma Thompson in it. And she kind of plays, like, Letterman, but a female Letterman.
Yeah. It's an interesting universe where the first woman in late night has been on since the early 90s.
Right.
Even though in real life, there still hasn't been really like a woman in late night besides like Chelsea Handler and people on cable.
Right. But she gets criticism for not hiring enough women and for not having a voice enough. Yeah. Yeah. So she's a trailblazer, but not enough.
Right. She's kind of grown complacent and lazy.
Right. Which is, that's where I get the Letterman thing, because the late Letterman years were a lot like that.
Yeah. And I love how she's styled as kind of like, you know, one of those female comics from the 80s.
Yeah.
You know,
with
like the shoulder, you know, like the short haircut and like the shoulder pads. And like they show flashbacks of her or like videos of her doing stand up in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's like definitely from that like brick wall era.
Yes, absolutely.
Like Rosie O'Donnell or one of them.
Right, yeah. She's definitely like a Rita Rudner fucking Ellen DeGeneres era.
A type, yeah.
Yeah.
People say that Ellen DeGeneres' show is really like a late night show, but it's on during the day, which...
I haven't watched enough of it to feel I understand that.
Yeah.
But I know people love it, so whatever.
But anyway, I agree with you. I think it's a great movie about comedians and how much darkness there is in the comedy world.
Right, right, right.
And I also just feel like as a really big fan of Mindy Kaling, I think... This movie, I watched this movie and I was like, wow, she's always been great, but I feel like she's growing so much because this is a really well-written movie.
Right.
And it's not like all funny like the Mindy Project was.
No, it almost reminded me of a kind of like James L. Brooks drama, Broadcast News.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, here's an interesting ensemble of characters, here's their relationships, here's... the interesting things they get out of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not all ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
There's a lot of just interesting characters.
And I also respected the fact that it was an interesting movie in that it was about Mindy's character as much as it was about Emma Thompson's character.
Right.
But I feel like the emphasis was actually more on Emma Thompson than it was on Mindy Kaling.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it could have easily been like The Devil Wears Prada.
Right.
But even though she's being mean sometimes, you feel for Emma Thompson's character.
Right. Unlike in Devil Wears Prada.
Right. Where you never... The Anna Wintour character is never... Not to the very end do they humanize her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you also have something interesting, which I think is a sort of comment on comedy, which is she's going to be replaced by Ike Barinholtz, who looks like kind of like Dane Cookie.
I was going to say, he gave me a lot of Dane Cook kind of
vibes. He's kind
of
Dane Cookie, but also Jimmy Fallon-y a little bit. And
but, well, no, he's much more crude and sexist.
Right, yeah, so he's more sort of Dane Cookie, yeah. And he's young and people like him. And, you know, she wasn't like a perfect feminist, but like she was a woman, at least in the early days of her career. Like they make a point of her earlier show was much more daring.
Yes.
But this guy's sort of like misogynistic and.
Yeah.
And shit. So like them replacing her with him sort of says something about the state of affairs in late night.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was really well acted. It was really well written. I really loved the relationship between Reed Scott and Mindy Kaling and how that evolved throughout the movie.
Oh, the
head writer.
The head writer of the monologue.
Which is a Mindy Kaling thing. Like, yeah. I feel like Mindy Kaling always writes herself, like, ending up with a guy that she hated at first.
Or like the mean doctor in the Mindy Project.
In the Mindy Project. Yeah, I think it's because she's such a fan of romantic comedies. And that's like a typical romantic comedy thing. But I felt like their relationship was actually felt like genuine and like interestingly developed, especially since there was that other writer that she has like a tryst with.
Yeah. And then, well, that's
who turns out to be like a bad guy.
Yeah. And that ends up being a whole subplot that I think makes the movie more complex than it could have been.
Right.
Because we find out that guy also had an affair with Emma Thompson.
Right.
And Emma Thompson, we know she has this relationship with her husband, who I think is a composer.
Yeah.
Who's played by
John Lithgow. Yeah. There you go.
Right. And he's good in it too.
He's really good, yeah.
So there's that whole thing. It's you've got the head of the network is a female.
Yeah. That's the only character that I felt was a bit underwritten.
the head of the network.
Yeah, because she kind of just does a turnaround too quickly.
And she's sort of a villain in the beginning.
Yeah.
Although I like the scene where she's like, I don't think your show is funny. Do you think it matters that I think your show is funny?
Right.
And she's like, no, I don't.
Yeah.
And it exists in a world where the others exist. Like, what? Like, Seth Meyers plays himself.
Yes.
Because Mindy Kaling at one point goes to work for Late Night.
Yeah. It's weird because it exists in a world where the others exist, but you don't know what network it's on. Mm. And then, like, her logo is, like, the exact... It's weird because it would be the Tonight Show
because
It's called Tonight with whatever.
Yeah.
But the logo looks like Colbert's logo.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. And she... You get the idea because she's older, she's, like, old school. Like, she's more the old guard.
And she... I like that, like, she has, like, heads of state and, like, really interesting people on as guests.
Right, right.
And there's that whole pushback of, like... You know, you need some like younger appeal or whatever.
But I thought it was a great scene where she has the YouTuber on.
Yes.
And she tries to fucking high road the YouTuber. The YouTuber's like, you need me. I don't need you. I just did this because my mom says you're funny.
Right.
And like walks out. And it's like kind of devastates Emma Thompson's character.
Yeah.
It was a movie. You know, some reviews I read said that the movie didn't know what it had to say. I think it just had a lot to say. And sometimes grown up movies are not, you know, paint by numbers perfect.
Right. No, I agree. I don't know why, but I kept thinking of that episode of The Twilight Zone that we critiqued
about
the comedian. Yeah. And I kept thinking, like, this is something that is actually saying something about being a comedian today.
Right. And the fake comedy in it, I bought.
Right.
I would buy that people would laugh at the things they were laughing at or not laugh at the things they weren't laughing at.
Right, right.
And even showing, like, when Emma Thompson bombs... you know, everyone's excited to see her because she's a celebrity.
Right.
And then she like, no one heckles her, but she's just getting nothing from them, which is what would happen when a celebrity bombs.
Right. And I like it was interesting to see like an insight into like how late night TV writers work.
Yeah.
And the crazy hours and how quickly everything comes together.
Yeah.
And like, just even like the part where the Mindy character is like, you need to have more bits that are outside the studio because those are the ones that go viral.
Right.
And those are the shareable ones, which is like true.
Right.
You know, and it's
and
like,
that's what James Corden does with the karaoke in the car.
Yeah.
But that also felt to me like a direct reference to Letterman, because at some point Letterman stopped doing it. He was like, I'm not going to go outside.
Yeah. Remember when Letterman used to go down to the deli?
Yeah. He used to do great, like there was a great one from the 90s where he worked in the drive-thru of a Taco Bell. Like he did a lot of great stuff and then he just stopped that. Where now that's like all Conan does.
Yeah.
All he does is go around the world and do remote bits.
Are the rumors true? I remember hearing rumors that woman who played his mother on the show was not his real mother.
No, it was his real mother.
It was his real mother? Yeah, that must have been a rumor then.
Yeah, no, it was real.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I remember he always had his mother on, and he always had that really old celebrity that he always said was dead.
Oh.
And then he'd come on and be like, I'm not dead, you bastard.
He wasn't a celebrity. He was a normal guy that our mom met a bunch of times.
Yeah, yeah, I remember he came into the diner she worked at.
She worked in a diner in Brooklyn. And I forget his real name, but his character's name was Larry Bud Melman. And he was one of the weird freaks that Letterman would have on.
I see. I thought he was a celebrity in his own right.
No, Letterman made him into a celebrity.
Well, I remember the two guys that worked in the deli.
The Hello Deli, yeah.
The Hello Deli. Like, they ended up, like, having bits, they did the top 10 list.
Like. Right, right. And they were just normal guys.
Yeah.
He did a lot of shit like that. In his 80s show, he would call. He had like a basically like a friendship with this woman who worked in an office across in a different building from him, like through the window. And he'd like talk to her all the time. He'd be like, we're going to check in. What's her name? So it's kind of like Emma Thompson, like he was a trailblazer and then he got lazy.
Yeah.
Like there's a scene where Emma Thompson is talking to, John Lithgow, and she's like, do you think that the show isn't funny? And he's like, I don't think it's been funny in years. And she's like, well, why didn't you tell me? And he's like, I thought you knew and didn't care.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I think what happens when you're on TV for so long.
You do the same thing every night.
Right.
5 nights a week. I mean, you either grow and evolve or, you know, or you don't. I don't know. It's just like it's got to go through cycles.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked at the end, like, seeing that she embraced like a more diverse workplace.
Right.
Like I loved the way everything kind of wrapped up at the
end. Right. But it didn't feel too SJW.
No.
It felt more like, you know, because one of the critiques I always have towards that mentality is originality how can you say that you want originality but not look for new sources of it?
Right.
Like, if you want originality, you then need new voices.
Right.
So to me, that's, it makes perfect sense. Like, you know, the show is stale because it's all white writers.
Right.
If you want different points of view, hire different people, and then you'll get new points of view. Like, to me, that's just makes perfect sense.
Right. But the thing is, I think, which I think the movie addresses, is like, then you've got to fire people who have been there for a really long time.
Right.
And that's where they run into.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
You know, like conflict with.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
But no, I thought it was really, really well done. And I did like the, and I did like, the part where Mindy was crying under her desk.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he was like, "You're a new writer. Write a joke."
Right. You know who he was?
Who?
He was Doogie Howser's best friend from Doogie Howser MT.
I thought he looked familiar.
Yeah, he was like a kid actor. No, he was good. He was like the old gruff guy who's been there for 30 years.
Yeah.
And like knows how to just do his job. And
yeah.
And then there were like the young hipster comics and like the comic that still does stand up. Like, even in the writer's room, I felt like everybody was fleshed out. You had like the nerdy fat guy who was like the Lutz, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I kept thinking of comparing it to the 30 Rock writer's room.
Yeah. Shut up, Lutz. yeah, I thought it was really great. If you haven't seen it, see it. For some reason, people have been lumping it together with Booksmart, because they're not superhero movies and women are in them, and they're like, and they're comparing the fact that they haven't made all the money in the world, so therefore they're failures. That's so stupid to me. First of all, I love both those movies. They're not alike at all.
Not at all.
But it seems like we're in a world now where it's like there's superhero movies and everything else.
Right.
And oh my God, this didn't make all the money, so it must be a failure. Which is like, if we keep thinking of that as the criteria for failure or success, then what we're going to have is just superhero movies in the theaters and regular movies on Netflix.
Right.
That's it.
Right. I mean, and even this, Late Night is an Amazon.
Right. Original. Right. Exactly.
So it could have easily, I think, you know, if it hadn't been as good as it was, they could have easily just been like, all right, well, it's going to be on Amazon Prime.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And it would have been even smaller.
Yeah, right. Oh boy. All right. Let's take a break and we'll come back with some obsessions. Welcome back to Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by brother mine, Anthony Buongiorno. Anthony, welcome back from the break.
Thank you so much.
This is Obsessions. Would you like to go first? Would you like me to go first? Who do you want to go first?
I'll go first, I guess. So my latest obsession, this is really relatively new. I just started listening to this podcast a couple days ago.
Sure, okay.
And I've been listening to it nonstop ever since because it's so funny.
Good.
It is called Saving Sex and the City 3.
All right, I'm interested.
Okay, so I'm going to read you the Stitcher or whatever synopsis. So it's, instead of letting Sex and the City 3 die a tragic death, Lara Marie Schoenels is taking matters into her own hands.
Uh-huh.
Each episode, Lara and a guest will recreate the final chapter of this beloved franchise, giving fans of the series the closure they deserve. So what it is basically it's her,
mm-hmm.
and then like a different comedian or writer or somebody will come on. And they just like spitball like what an idea for the third one would be.
Uh-huh.
And then they just in its entirety like talk through the whole movie from beginning to end. But they're all like ridiculous and stupid and like really, really, really funny.
Okay.
So like this one, like just to give you an example of one. So the first one I listened to was actually the first one, which had me like crying because it was so funny. It's called Summer of Sam.
Uh-huh.
And it's the synopsis, Samantha Jones is the first victim in a string of brutal murders, devastating Carrie and the girls. However, they have no choice but to be strong, honor Samantha's life, and do whatever it takes to stop the killer before he or she strikes again. So that's one. And they just fantastic. Talk through the whole thing. And then they do like what the puns would be.
Yeah.
So there's a part where they're like, and Carrie would be like, the police tape said, do not cross the line. But I couldn't help but wonder, have I crossed the line? And then like this latest one is It's called Operation Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And it's oh, and it's called Summer of Sam because it's right, Samantha Jones dies and it's a serial killer. This dystopian action-packed reimagining of Sex and the City 3 takes place after a horrific bird flu has wiped out half of the global population, leaving our favorite girls to pick up the pieces. Sadly, their friendships have become fractured in the aftermath of the virus. Carrie has locked herself away to shield herself from becoming infected. Samantha has given up sex and risen to political power. Miranda has shaved her head and is leading the rebellion, and Charlotte is mistakenly assumed dead. With Christmas around the corner, will they be able to reunite and save the world, or is hope as we know it lost forever?
That sounds great.
It's so.
Do they do impressions?
It's
and
so
stuff?
Funny. They don't really do impressions. They just like, I mean, kind of. It depends on who the guest is.
Yeah, yeah.
But the main host is just a big fan,
right,
and she's like a writer and she's really funny, and like at the beginning of every episode, like the intro is like talking about it like it's a tragic event. She's on whatever day 2018 it was announced that Sex and the City 3 was abruptly canceled, and it's like the fans deserve justice and I am going to make it happen.
That's a really great idea.
It's
for
a great
podcast.
Idea and it's so funny. And it's funny because it's always like people who are super fans, but then they just go to,
you kind of make fun of it, but you still love it.
They're honoring it, but then they're also making fun of how stupid it is.
That's a really great idea.
It's a really funny podcast. So it's called Saving Sex and the City 3.
Saving Sex and the City 3. That's really great. You know, the Summer of Sam, that could work because then you wouldn't have to have...
Well, a lot of them start with Samantha's death and then like work backward from there. Like one of them is was inspired by 13 Reasons Why.
Sure.
It was like Sam sending them all their tapes.
Yeah, that's I think the only way you'd get them together to do that.
Yeah. And it's very improv-y, like whenever somebody brings up something, the other one is like, yeah, great. Like it's just always
yes and
they just build on each other.
That's really great. How long is the typical episode?
They're kind of long because they go through like the whole movie. Like I'm looking here. They're all over an hour. Some of them are like, but like Samantha's Reasons Why, the one based on Reasons Why is 2 hours.
Wow. So this is a fairly new podcast, right? How many episodes are there?
It started in 2018. Yeah, there are only a few episodes. It looks like there are like 15 to 20 episodes.
We're almost at 90 on this podcast.
Well, I mean, it's not a competition.
Isn't it though? But,
and some pretty good guests. Danny Pellegrino, Dan Levy.
Oh, okay.
Very
sexy man.
Wait,
I'm thinking of... Yeah, Dan Levy is...
Yeah. Some good people. There's one... The Election, SATC3, The Election.
Wouldn't it be great if they got an actual cast member?
It would be.
That would be the fucking
holy grail.
And this
one is about Miranda's candidacy as president of the United States.
Okay, I like that.
I'm dying to know what the
It's almost
actual,
like fan fiction. I love that.
It is.
But like fun fan fiction.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'd love to know what the actual synopsis was going to be.
Yeah.
I've heard some bits and pieces, and it sounded awful.
What
so
was
it's
it?
Probably for the best.
Did they go back like, to Morocco?
One of the reasons why apparently Kim Cattrall said no is because she was offended by the Samantha storyline. And part of it had to do with like Brady, who's now like a teenage boy, was like sexting her.
Okay.
Like as if he would be interested in aunt.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. So she was just like, this is just such bad material.
She's right, though.
Yeah. And so she walked away, which I respect.
Right. She should have walked away from 2.
Well, what's funny is even the fans are like, 2 is horrible.
Right.
But
2 is like a fan fiction.
Yeah,
it's just
it's
so insane.
What I'd really like to see is for them to just be like, let's do it small and let's just do another season on HBO.
That would be good, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No,
either.
It won't. Not without Kim Cattrall. Although they could, Janine, who's been on the podcast, has said like they should start with her funeral and just be really shady and be like, well, Samantha died of old age. So we're going to have to go on without her.
She died of old age.
But no, it's a really funny podcast.
That sounds really funny.
Would your idea be?
Oh, wow. I'm trying to think of a real idea. I guess a ridiculous idea would be like Big was always like a spy. Like, the reason we don't know anything about him is because he was always, like... Oh, like, he was a Russian spy.
Beautiful.
And we find out now that he was somehow related to the Russian that she was...
Oh, and that's why he had show up to take him
right,
out.
Exactly, right. And Carrie, really... Her love life has really always been, through, you know, Comedy of Errors, gotten... hooked up with
so she's like the Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Oh, and it kind of be like
movie. I got it. Big is QAnon.
Oh my god. That's great.
Yeah. That's mine. What about you?
A lot of them are a lot of them focus on like Carrie being an insufferable character, and then just like at the end Carrie's the murderer. Like, it's always like Carrie's unraveling. So I feel like it would be funny to just like play with that and be like, every man that she's ever dated has actually been like a part of, she has DID.
Oh, so it's
none of these, all her alters.
So it's like United States of Tara.
Yeah, it's United States of Tara. The girls don't exist. This at the end, she's just in a cell.
That I love that. You just, it ends with her in a straitjacket, yeah, in a padded room. And like, you see her holding a martini, but then it cuts to her in the padded room and she's holding a rat.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, my obsession isn't as entertaining as yours. My obsession is actually a TV sitcom that I always ignored because I thought that looks fucking stupid. And then I watched it all recently, Superstore.
Okay.
It's an NBC show, and I've
heard great things about it.
Yeah, it has it's had 4 seasons. And it's really funny. Look, it's very derivative of The Office, and it even has some of The Office writers. It's sort of The Office in Target,
okay,
or Walmart.
But, so it's like The Office, but they're all making way less money too. Which
right. Yeah. And they're. By the way, no show has ever had a better way to do product integration, like product placement.
Oh yeah.
The main character is Jonah, and he's like a college boy, and he like took the job on a lark, and he thinks he's better than them. And then the other star is America Ferrera, and she's the floor manager, and she is really smart, but she got pregnant and married really young, and so like, so there's a lot to do with class.
Okay, I love America Ferrera.
She's fantastic.
Yeah, she's great.
She's amazing. At the end of season one, they try to start a union. Like, there's a funny scene where like they want to try, one of the characters is pregnant and they want to try to get her maternity leave, which they can't. So Jonah and Amy, which are the two main characters, they call up the store and they're like, anyway, we were wondering if we can get maternity leave for this one character. And they're like, oh, we don't know. And she was like, well, if we had a union. And they're like, hold on a second. And then, like, they come back, and it's like, hi, I got this person on the phone, that person on the phone, and there's, like, 5 people in the time. Like, so what are you guys saying about union? And, like, because she said union, like, it becomes a big deal because they're so – and then they send the union buster to come and be like, we're a family. So it's a lot about the fact that they don't have a union. It's a lot about the fact that they mistreat people.
Yeah.
It's a lot about almost like the way after 2009 and the economic crash, The Office started to – seriously think about like what corporate America is, and they did the thing where Dunder Mifflin was sold and bought again. It's sort of like that. Like, it's a very silly one camera show, you know, very much influenced by other shows like that.
Does it have like the talking heads like The Office?
No, it doesn't do the camera works a lot like it, but it doesn't do the fake documentary thing.
Okay.
But it deals with interesting issues. Like, there's one character named Mateo who we find out in like the middle of season one is an illegal, he's undocumented.
Okay.
And he didn't know that because his grandparents lied to him. And so one of his storylines throughout every season is he's afraid he's going to get caught.
Okay.
And sometimes the others try to save him and help him. It's really interesting dealing with that kind of thing.
So is it still on or is it done?
No, season 4 just ended, and it had a really sort of surprising ending, like a cliffhanger. And now it's coming back for season 5 on September 26th.
Okay. Maybe I'll check that out this summer. It sounds like a quick binge.
It's a quick binge. It's very light, but it's not bad. You got America Ferrera as the lead character, Ben Feldman as Jonah, Lauren Ash as Dina, and she's sort of like the Dwight, but whereas Dwight was sort of worshipped Michael Scott, she is always fighting with the manager. But she's sort of the weird one, like she owns birds, and she's like the odd one. And then, I don't know, if you're a comedy nerd like me, their boss, Glenn, is played by comedy legend Mark McKinney from, he was one of the kids in the hall.
Okay.
And he is great as the boss. And just like in The Office, as the seasons go on, you get more and more in the background people. Actually, Ike Barinholtz's brother, John Barinholtz, plays one of the guys in the warehouse, and he's like a funny character.
Okay.
And he looks like Ike Barinholtz, but better looking.
Okay.
Like, here's a picture of him.
He does. You could tell they're brothers, but he is better looking.
Right. You can tell they're brothers even when they speak. So Superstore is a really fun show. If you're looking for a light summer binge, I believe it's all on Hulu right now.
Okay.
So check it out.
I definitely will.
Well, Anthony, we've had a long episode. I think we did it.
By God, we've done it.
By God, it's another episode. You can listen to Pop Culture Man Children anywhere podcasts are available. Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, fucking Spotify. Google Play, Spotify, all that shit. You can follow at Pop Culture Man Children on Instagram. Anthony, you're on Twitter?
No
Twitter for Anthony. All right, you ready to go bye-bye?
Yes, I'm ready.
Let's go bye-bye.